Okay, why don't we get started? There's actually quite a bit to cover here, and despite what the title says, really hard to cover everything there is to know about Appian Office in 75 minutes. So I want to make sure I leave plenty of time at the end for questions. I know in Europe sometimes you're a little shy to answer the questions. You don't want it to be recorded or be on the mic. I'll try to be up front for as long as I can, or we can walk out in the hallway. I'll be at Meet the Experts as well. You'll find us in the Windows Management booth. Just find the Windows section, Windows Client. Look for the Management booth. Me and my team will be there, as well as the developer team as well, and we can talk more about it if you have questions. So I'll do the best I can to cover most of the general issues and questions and concerns that come at the office. I can't cover everything, so be sure you find me whether you talk in this session or come later. So let me introduce myself first. I'm Britton Zerker. I'm a senior PM manager on the MDOP team. I've been working on MDOP and at Microsoft for almost 5 years. I was here in Europe 2 years ago when we were in Amsterdam, and I announced and introduced UEV 1.0. Hopefully, you've had a chance to use and deploy that product. We've had kind of a consolidation of MDOP to a single site. Before in the US, we were kind of spread out across the Washington State, Boston on the other coast, and then Salt Lake City, me and my team are. And just recently, that's all been consolidated to my office in Utah. We've had AppV for about 9 months now, and we're really excited to have that product. We have a new release. If you were at Aaron Ruckman's session yesterday, he's a member of my team. We talked about the Service Pack 3 release that'll be coming out very, very soon. So we're excited to have our first release as owners of the AppV product. So hopefully, you find that to be a good experience too. So today, we're going to talk about everything you need to know about Office and AppV 5.0 SP2, soon to be 5.0 SP3. So let's get right into it here. Let me make one disclaimer. If you happen to be in the US in May in Tech Ed, this is the same session. I'm not offended if you thought you were going to come here and learn or learn some new things. There have been a couple of updates to a few things. For the most part, it's the same session. If you want to come back for the questions and leave now, that's totally okay with me. I won't be offended at all. Also, I know it's during lunchtime. I appreciate you being here. If you want to eat while I'm talking, that doesn't offend me either. So let's get going. So really, there's two objectives to our discussion today, two things that I really want everyone to walk away from here. Number one is understanding why Office 2013 is important for your enterprise. The product's been designed for enterprise. The experiences and the management capabilities are much more robust than what you've experienced in 2007 and 2010. I know that customers are a little bit under-motivated for new upgrades because of the XP, probably to the Office 2010 situation, and you're not immediately considering Office 2013. I'm going to try to convince you that, hey, you should go back and talk to your management, get your plans in this year if you can. The second thing we'll talk about, and that'll be more of an agnostic discussion about all the options you have, not just with AppV. The second half of the discussion will be about, well, how is it different for AppV customers? How is it different if you deploy Office 2013 with AppV 5? And so I'll give you a good understanding of that. You should be able to walk away then with a good understanding of both those sides, be equipped with a lot of information to go back to your teams and talk about how do we want to consider our deployment of Office 2013. Before I move on, I want to get a feel for everyone in the room of where you stand as far as the AppV product in Office. So I'm just going to do a quick straw poll, if that's okay. If I could have everyone raise their hand if you deployed any version of Office with any version of AppV, just a show of hands, how many in the audience has experience? It's less than half. That surprises me a little bit. That's probably about a third. So the rest of this won't go, there won't be very many here. How many are still on 2007 in AppV? Anyone left? One person. Wow, you're brave. One person's left on 2007. 2010? Okay, about half of the ones that raised their hand before, and then of course 2013 on AppV. Oh, a good number of you. So hopefully I can teach you some things you don't know. For the rest of you, you'll get a really good overview of this. I'm excited you get to be here and learn about this. Last question on 2013. Is there anyone that's deploying 2013 without AppV? You're using Click to Run. So a few of you as well. So we'll cover things that might be important to you as well if you don't understand these things. All right, so let's move on here. So I've divided it up into three sections of the discussion. We'll talk about first, how do you plan? What are the things that you sit down with your team with to understand? We'll talk about licensing a little bit. We'll talk about RDS, Remote Desktop Services, and Virtual Desktop Infrastructure. Make sure we have a good baseline understanding of what that is, especially when it comes to licensing considerations and Office 365. And then we'll talk about how do you get an AppV package. If for Office 2013. It's a very different experience. It's much better, as many of you have talked about, and we'll demo that too. Then we'll move on to the Pure App V section. So we'll talk about how do you deploy then once you have a package, what are the prerequisites, what are the things you have to consider, how do you handle plugins? We have a new concept of connection groups in 5.0. If you're on App v4.6, there's similar concepts. There's a brand new system for connection groups in App v5, and we'll talk about how that correlates with plugins for Office, which is a very important scenario for many of you. And then lastly, there's a lot of discussion about coexistence. A lot of you are using App v because you want to be able to coexist two versions of Office. We'll talk about the supported scenarios for that and the best practices to do coexistence. And then the last section we'll talk about, now you've actually deployed Office 2013 with App v. How do you manage it? We'll talk about how you do updates. Very different, much more simple than how you've done it in 2007 and 2010. And then we'll talk about how do you customize, how do you make changes. We have another great system in App v5 called deployment configurations that allows you to modify packages you've already deployed without redeploying them. And I'll give you a demo on how and give you some ideas on how you can use that to your advantage. Okay, so let's get right into it, not to waste any more time on that. Okay, so let's get a baseline understanding of what are the options that you now have with Office 2013 as far as deployment. So I've got the three majorly supported deployment methods here. The first one is what we're calling click to run. I think the Office team, the marketing side, is trying to get away from that. What that essentially means is you're deploying without a traditional install. It is an App v. It is a subset of App v when you deploy with click to run. It's just not the traditional enterprise MDOT product that many of you are used to. And so we call that a software as a service. That means it runs completely as a service. If you choose not to do so, all the updates are delivered automatically. Your users go and self-service and download and install it. You manage those users and their entitlements through a cloud service, et cetera, et cetera. You have other deployment options. However, if you choose not to have auto updates, you have options to slow the roll, so to speak, put the updates, package the updates yourself, put them in a location on premise so that you can update your users as you want. It's always up to date, like we talked about, if you choose to go that route. As far as what options you have when you actually package the product, you have group policy and you have the ability in what we're going to demonstrate here in a little bit is the deployment toolkit. You have the ability to customize how you create packages for users. And then finally, runtime and preference customizations, you have the ability to do that with GP and add-ins. Okay, talking about App v then, we call that an on-premise software. It's the services in quotes. It's not a traditional service. You run it like a service, but you own it end to end, meaning your users still have a seamless update experience, a seamless deployment experience, but you manage it almost 100%. And so you have a few more deployment options than you would in Office 365. The App v server being the component there that's probably most differentiated. Just like the options you have in 365, you deploy the updates, you have to package them. It's a more simple process now, but that's yours to control. Same install time control options, in fact, using the exact same tool, and we'll talk about it and demo that in a moment. And then you have very similar configuration options once the product's been deployed, with the exception of deployment configuration, which I teased a little bit. We'll talk about that in that third section, about how that's important for App v and how it differentiates itself from what you can do with Office 365 Direct. And then lastly, you know the drill on this one, the MSI. I won't go into a lot of detail. This is still your traditional method. You deploy it in your image. You deploy MSPs and patches. You use Moo and Woo or WSUS. It's the traditional method. The one distinction there, if you notice, the OCT, Office Customization Tool, is only available if you do an MSI deployment. And the reason why the Office team is doing this is they feel a lot of the functionality in OCT can be done and accomplished through ADMX and group policy. And so they're taking feedback on this. We get a few customers, typically, if they're blocked from going with Office 365 or Office 365 on App v because of OCT, normally it's because they're running third-party software out of OCT. And there's ways they can work around it. So if you have those issues, drop me a line. I'm giving some of that feedback back to Office. For the most part, most customers are able to get away from OCT pretty easily, but that is not supported on anything but the MSI deployment, just to be clear. Okay, let's move on. Quickly about licensing in Office 365. So now you've got two models to choose from. So you still have your traditional volume license, and then of course you have your subscription license. Hopefully a lot of you are considering moving to the right side there to subscription license. So let's talk about the difference. On the volume license side, this is an important distinction. Typically, it's MSI. But if you notice, AppV is still supported there. So you can configure your packages to support volume licenses in AppV. Office 365, then, AppV is also supported, but of course, it's click to run if you decide not to go with AppV. So that's an advantage for AppV. If you're starting off and you have a hybrid system where some are subscription in your environment, some are license, then you have a better story. You may even have a situation where you're starting in volume license. Over time, you're going to move to Office 365, and this is where AppV can maybe be an advantage for you. So that's why I have that bolded. The next thing to talk about is activation support. With volume licensing, you put up a KMS, you have the MAK, that's how you activate your server, that's all on-premise. Office 365, as you know, has a licensing service, and your endpoints have to connect to that service periodically to verify activation. They have to use Active Directory, their credentials to activate, et cetera. As far as availability, obviously volume license, every volume license program has Office. All of the online volume license enterprise licenses also have Office 365 entitlements. You shouldn't have an issue here. You should be in a program where you have entitlements either. And you'll have to talk to your licensing specialist about pricing, et cetera. This is an important point, as far as device and user licensing and then activation, which are very different, on the volume licensing side, you're licensing and you're activating per device. A lot of people sometimes are confused. It's not by user, it's by device. It's how it's always been traditionally. That continues in Office 2013. On the licensing side, however, you're licensing per user. And what that means is every user that you purchase the subscription for, they can activate a version of Office on 5 of their devices. So it's a more economical model in modern age where you have users with more than one device. I think there's a lot of advantage to that. On the activation side for Office 365, then, you have an option for both. So you can go with a traditional model, and usually if you just have a one-to-one ratio user to machine, you're just going to stay with the default, which is per-device activation, just like with volume license. However, if you're in RDS, if you're in Citrix, if you're in any kind of server or shared computer deployments, you have the option to do per-user activation. And I'll talk about that in more detail in the next slide. So that's an important point and an important advantage for Office 365, especially if you're considering 2013 in an RDS terminal server scenario. And then lastly, org ID and MSA, that's not required for volume licensing, but it is a nice thing to have because you get things like the recently used files roaming, some other settings roaming, certainly not required. On the Office 365, it is required, obviously, for the activation piece. You must have Azure Active Directory entitlement and manage your users that way. And then the last thing to talk about is RDS. Now, when I was in Houston in May and talking about this, all I could say was that volume license was the only situation where RDS was supported for Office 365 or for Office 2013. That's now been changed. Now that there is a user activation model in Office 365, they're both supported. So that takes away a huge blocker. If that was keeping you back from considering Office 365 for your Office 2013 deployment, that's now been removed. With the updates this summer, that now works seamlessly, and we'll talk more about that. Okay, so let's go just briefly into that point that I was talking about. So this applies only to Office 365 for Office 2013, not for volume license. So it's still current. This is the default. So user-based subscription activation. What this means is your user logs into a device. They'll get the prompt, or you can use the customization to actually auto-log them in single sign-on, but they'll essentially have to validate their Office 365 org ID credentials, and then that machine, the entire machine then is activated. So if a subsequent user logs in, they're activated, they're tied to that user's activation, which is why it hasn't been supported in this mode on RDS. So the second user, if that user logs in and the first user happens to have an expired entitlement, you remove that user from the system, that user will get a prompt now and be the one that's tied to it. So in an RDS situation, that's a very problematic issue, which is why you see that's not supported. So let's talk now about shared computer activation, which is now new. If you download the latest version of the Office product and you download the Office Deployment Toolkit, you'll have the option to turn this on. And what this means now is that users that log into the system, they will have the same experience. You can auto-log them in with the customization, single sign-on, or they can put in their prompts, but they're activating just for that for them. They get a token, which is stored in their user profile. And it's only good for that session. User 1 logs in and validates. User 2, 3, 4, and 5 will also have to log in and validate. And so that state is that state can also be maintained. So if you're worried, if you want to have it so that your users actually do put in their prompts, if you're worried about that experience, like in a VDI, a composable VDI environment, they have to log in every single time, there is a way to make that so that it's seamless, or they don't have to do it each time. So it is a good experience. So that's your option now for RDS, and that's really what that should be called, is rather than shared computer activation, most of you will turn this mode on if you're in Citrix and RDS. So let's just get a quick baseline. I'm going to go quickly through this because I think a lot of you have some knowledge here, but I'll make sure we're talking about the same thing. So let's talk about the different RDS and VDI scenarios here in case we refer back to them. So this is probably one of the most common ones. It's the most economical. RDS session host, remote app. This is your Citrix. You have a single server. So this would be a server OS. And Office is installed only once. And then each user then is entitled, it's a multi-session environment, each user is entitled to applications. Either they get the full desktop experience or you're just remoting apps to their client experience, but each user gets one. So it's a many-to-one relationship. One note that I have on the bottom here, and I'll have a link later on that will talk more about this, we introduced this shared content store mode in SP2. If you have an RDS deployment at all, VDI or RDS, it's something you should consider. Any kind of data center environments, you're going to want to enable the shared content store. And essentially what that means is rather than store and stream the applications and store them on disk on the actual presenting device, you're just deploying a shell, and the actual content of the app is streamed to memory each and every time. So if you have a dynamic composable environment, if you have expensive storage where those things are, you want to stream them off of SAN, that's what you need to use. Your performance is going to be a lot better. We also, if you have a UEV deployed, there's also an ability to use a UEV template, a recipe, to pre-deploy or to roam the publishing state for all of your users, and so that also will improve your performance at login. We have some documentation that I'll point that out to when we get to in the presentation. Okay, so the next thing you have is actual virtual desktop infrastructure. It also is a server host. However, rather than present from a multi-user session from server, you're now using Hyper-V to display client desktops, client instances on that server for each user. In a persistent model, that means that a user logs in, it's like getting a brand new machine, profile set up. When they log off, that machine sits idle until they come back to it, and it's just like it's a physical machine. That's not very economical for most of you. Some of you might have security reasons. Or it's a limited amount of users in your environment, that's where persistent might be better. But most of you, if you're considering VDI, you have it deployed, you're probably looking at what we call volatile or pooled VDI. And what that means is just like the previous situation, it's a Hyper-V environment, client VMs, but it's in a dynamic nature, so those things are composed on the fly. So when the user logs in, hopefully you have a profile roaming solution. There's one inbox for RDS. If you're using Citrix, they have their own. UEV can help you with this. And that user profiles automatically provisioned, so the states maintain session to session. This is where AppV can be tremendously advantageous and where you really need shared content store. Your apps can be composed from AppV, from the AppV server. And then you're keeping a standard gold image where all those desktops are being created. So the user logs off, that desktop session is obliterated on that machine, but the state, the apps, et cetera, are all being managed and hopefully backed up in another location. So this is probably the model you're going to be looking at if you're serious about deploying VDI widespread in your organizations. Okay? So just briefly, let's talk about, I know we've got a lot to go here. I'm going to get the demos here really quick. Just bear with me. I want to make this point about RDS and VDI licensing. It can be a little complicated. As a disclaimer, I'm not an expert. I talked to a lot of you about your scenarios, and I can answer some of the more basic questions. You want to go back and talk to your licensing specialist or look at your product use right agreement. To get specifics on this, but let me give you a quick overview. For both of these models, whether you go with volume license or Office 365, you of course have to have Windows and server licenses for RDS and VDI, so make sure you have that one to start with. But here's the first distinction. We talked about volume licensing as activating at the device level. In Office 365, because it's per user, let's see. Let me back up on this one. On the volume licensing, the licensing actually happens on the device connecting. So if they're corporate assets and the user is connecting from on-premise, That device has to be licensed for Office, not the server that they're accessing. On the Office 365 side, because it's per user licensing, because they have 5 entitlements, that just counts as one of their licenses. They do not have to have that device license for Office. So it's a little bit different in that respect. If you're talking about third-party devices that are still corporate assets being accessed on-prem, you have to have software assurance on the volume license side to be able to access Office. On the Office 365 side, again, because it's user licensed, it doesn't matter if it's third-party or not. It's just one of their 5 entitlements for the user. So that simplifies that tremendously. And then the last thing, this is probably the most complicated part of our licensing model. If you have BYOD devices that are not corporate assets, you need to look at your agreements. There are some specific things that you can buy on both sides, but this is where you probably are going to need help. You need to talk about your specific scenarios, how your users are accessing them, and they can give you more information on what you need to purchase for this. All right, so just a real quick primer. Hopefully, it'll point you in the direction of where you might want to get more information for your specific scenarios. Okay, so let's take a trip back. We're now going to kind of transfer to talking now only about App V and the Office deployment. So just a trip down memory lane. Some of you are coming from 2007, or maybe you're even considering that. So let's just talk about where we are. So 2007 was the first mainstream version of Office that was really supported by the App V product. It was our old 4.x product. And if any of you have done this, it was a really labor-intensive process for packaging. You have to use what's called the App V sequencer. For those that aren't familiar with that, you spin up a VM. It's clean. You shut down your AV software, et cetera. And you actually record the install process for Office. But it was much more complicated than that. There were certain things that you had to exercise in the product and modify. And sideload, there was an MSP you actually had to deploy to get licensing to work. And so you can still go look at it. It's what we call a recipe, which takes you step by step for how you have to use a sequencer, how you have to exercise the Office install, even post-install processes to get it to work. The last point on that is there were no OS integrations. So if you deployed a native version of 2007 and a virtual version of 2007, some of the integrations just didn't work. And that was one of the sacrifices you made to move to App V for Office. So in 2010, it improved a little bit. You still have to go through the sequencing process. This is the one that looks like most of you are on if you've deployed it. So you already know what this process is like. You still have to sideload 2 applications. The recipe is still long, not quite as long as in 2007, but it's still more labor intensive than it should have to be. And then the last thing is, for 2010 was the first version that added OS integrations. So you had the ability, for example, to have the right file type association. You had the ability in shell shortcuts. Things like that worked for the first time. In 2013, then, this is where it's really improved. So there's 0 sequencing required. So there's no need for you to get the MSI, and no reason for you to spin up the VMs and actually do the sequencing like you did in 7 and 2010. You download the media directly. That media is almost ready for you to deploy. In Office 2013, it's the first version that the virtual experience is exactly like native. Now, Office team, they're calling Click-to-Ring native now. But MSI would also be considered native. But App V is literally identical to those experiences. So all the OS integrations will work exactly as you expect. And then we have this great tool called ODT, and this is what you use to get the package ready. I'm going to demo it for you right now. It's a really simple process. You just download the tool. You use the tool to download the Office media, and then you use it to convert it into App V packages. So here's a link here, right here. It's our URL shortener. We have an improved document. So in Houston, there was a white paper that I showed you if you saw my video. It was a little bit incomplete and confusing. We've improved that documentation. I've updated this link to go right into our core documents, and it will give you a great overview of 2013. If you're still on 2010, it'll also talk about that and has a little bit better guidance there, but I recommend you take a look at this as you plan for 2013. So let's talk a bit about Office Deployment Tool. So like I said, it's a download you get right from Download Center free. It's small. And it's used not only for App V packaging, but it's also used for Click to Run. So if you're an administrator in Office 365 not using App V, you'll also use ODT to make customizations of the packages you download. So that's a good thing to note as well. So you customize it, and you use a text file to do that, and we'll talk, and I'll show it about it right now, and then you'll convert it over to packages ready for deployment. And here's a good example of some of the customizations that you can make before you package, both for the downloading and packaging SKU. So whether you're doing retail 365, whether you're doing Pro Plus or Professional Plus version of the product, you have the ability to control which one's being downloaded. Otherwise, it will just get the latest bitness, 32 versus 64. Adding languages to it, excluding applications, a whole lot that you can do when you prepare those packages. But the important point to note is you're not worrying about the sequencing and the big recipes that you've had previously. So it's a big, big amount of savings from that point. So here's the configuration file for the ODT. So we're just going to talk about this for a moment. It's XML. Don't be scared of it. This is not inclusive of all the options. There's a ton. Some of them are App Beef specific. Some of them are Office 365 Click to Run specific. Just go read the documentation so that you know what options, which options are which. So this one I prepared, it's actually for, it would be for an App Beef package. First thing is just the source of where you downloaded the media. So the first step is you're going to download it. So this would be where you put it. This is a local path. You can do a server path if you have multiple people using it or you want to keep it on a machine where it archives it for you. Like I said, the version's optional. If you don't put version in there, you'll just get the one that's latest. And they're releasing updates, for those not familiar, about once a month. And so if you want to control what you're packaging, this is where you'd put it. Bitness here, 32 or 64. So here's your SKU. And you can see here that this one is an Office 365 deployment. It's adding Visio. So you can add the products that you need there. You can also now exclude them. And I'll talk more about that. You can actually exclude applications in the Pro Plus suite, for example. Next one is your language. So this will download the culture. You can stack as many as you want. One point I'll make out, and we'll look at sizes of packages. The more languages you add here, the bigger the package. The longer it's going to take to push those bits to your users. Also on the publishing side, it's going to take a little bit longer. We recommend you try to keep those limited to only the languages you need. Or if you have a lot of needs, you may need to package several times to keep the package size down. So you just need to kind of try it out. It's very easy to test it out, add languages, take them out, see what size makes sense for you and how to split them up. So just one thing to be aware of on culture. Okay, finally, first demo. All right. So first thing I'll say is I gave you a little shortcut from our shortener as well, aka.ms, to MSODT. So if you hit that one rather than try to search around for it, you don't want to do ODT. There's so many acronyms. Use mine. It'll use MSODT. It'll take you there every time. This will be the latest and greatest ODT. So even on the slow network here at the conference center, it's a tiny little file. I'll go ahead and run it and show you what I got, except the EULA. And essentially, all it's going to do is it's going to extract files in this step. So I've already got this pre-extracted. It's not actually going to install anything. So I've extracted it to my C drive. Let me actually zoom in here so you can see it. That's better. So I've got it extracted to my C drive. And there will be two files that you'll get, and I'll highlight them here. You'll get a configuration, and you'll get a setup.exe. Now, this is an exe with a GUI. It's a command line exe, so when you click it and you get an error, remember, hey, you actually have to do it from the command prompt. Don't be scared by that. It's actually a very simple process. It's a very simple application. So let's take a look at it. So get an elevated command prompt. All right. Zoom in for you. And I'll change to the ODT. And I'm just going to run the help. Just very first there. So there's setup. And I'll just run the help switch, and we can look at the options. So the first option here is your download. And then you're given a path. Each time you do it, you're given a path to that configuration file. So again, the configuration file gives all of your customization, install time options, your culture, your SKU. You can keep multiple of these as a library if you're doing multiple packages with different configurations. But what you set for download, whatever you have in that configuration file is what it's going to download. When you do a packaging step, the configuration file needs to match what you downloaded, otherwise you'll get an error. So that's the download mode. Configure is actually how you'd use it for Office 365, click to run. I'm not going to go into details on the customizations there. Again, you can find out. I'm going to talk more about App V. The last one then is Packager, and that's the step that we'll be looking at today. That's actually how you package and convert the click to run stream into a real App V package. Okay, so let's take a real quick look at the configuration that we're going to be using for the demos today. So I just got to have a Pro Plus one here. So you can see I'm just going to download it right to my source. One point to make on this one, a lot of IT pros, what they'll do is they'll put this out on a server store, and then they'll run a scheduled task for the download command. And they'll run that, you know, every week or every 2 weeks. And that way, they're keeping a library of all the versions that they get. So they'll keep it without a version, just like I have it here, but then run it on a scheduled task, so when they need it, it's ready. You can always go back and download old versions. You just set the version into the command, so it's not like they're not going to be made available by Microsoft, but it's nice to have versions local. So that's just a tip that I've seen a lot of IT pros doing this use. So we're going to use standard 32-bitness. We're going to use the Pro Plus volume license one, so we're going to be looking at volume license. Just the English culture, just for purposes of time. And that's it. That's all I had to do, just to get a standard Pro Plus download and packaging ready to go. So let's talk a little bit about sizes. So normally, fortunately, I've already downloaded this, but I'll show you the commands. So if I'm ready to go and that's my configuration file, I'll use the download switch. And then I'll call the configuration, the Pro Plus volume we just created. And then that would start streaming the files down. So I'm going to escape this because we've already done it. And what I'm going to do is show you. So what you'll get is you'll get this Office directory. So if I hover over it, you'll see it's 2 gigs. I have 2 versions in here. So if I go in to the data, you see I have a version I downloaded from May, and I have a version that I just downloaded last week. So you'll see they're about 1 gig each. So if we look a little bit deeper, you'll see these streams. So this stream here would actually be the product bits. And that will increment if you add Visio and Project. But right now, this is the full Pro Plus build. So with Visio and Project, it doesn't get much bigger than that. Where you get bigger is the culture. So the English culture, I think, is 200 megs. Depending on your language, that will increment accordingly. So that's just something you should be aware of. OK, so let's step back over then to the command prompt. And we're going to go ahead and do the packaging. So I know my configuration's right. I've got the right SKUs, the right cultures. I'm just going to call setup again. I'm going to call packager. And I'm going to get the configuration. Now here, you're going to give it a working directory. If you're going to put it off in a server share, you can give it a server share. I'm just going to have it save right to the same working directory. So I'll just leave a dot. Off it goes. I'll zoom back out. Oop. Did I call the wrong one? All right. I called the wrong configuration. So there you go. That's a good point to start. So if you notice, I called the wrong configuration, which means it didn't match what I downloaded, and I got that error message. Now, that error message is what you'll get no matter what error you make. It doesn't tell you anything about it. I'm giving the Office team feedback on that. This is a great point. So where do you find out what went wrong? The best place to do that is, by default, the log files are going to go to your user profile in the temp directory. You can change the location, but most people don't. So don't be surprised if it's not in your working directory, but it's actually in your profile. So you can just use that shortcut, percent temp percent, and then sort by date. And then the last log file is the one here. And that will give you the troubleshooting step. So you can see what actually happened. You look in there, and you'd find out, oh, the downloaded bits didn't match the ones that I was trying to package. So that's a good point. That's you really have to make sure that they match. So let's go back and fix this. So I'll use download. I'm sorry, packager. Get the right one this time. And then I'm going to save it off to my working directory. You can give it a path if you want. Off it'll go. Zoom out. So the flattener starts. That's what we call it. And this will take about 3 or 4 minutes. While that's baking, I'm going to come back to some slides. And then we'll get back to that and look at deployment. OK. So now you've got your bits ready to go. What do you need to know about deployment? So let's talk about prereqs. And if you're familiar with the AVV4 product, you had this ability as well. But there's this ability to do post-deployment scripts. Huge advantage of the AVV product. It's already built into the product. You can script about anything you'd like. The same thing exists in the 5.0 product. We brought that forward. But it's turned off by default for a security reason. The Office package, you don't have to create scripts to get Office to install. Like I said, that media is ready to go. Once I do my packaging, everything I need to be a native install of Office 2013. But the Office team does have scripts in there. So if you run into errors trying to install Office 2013, this is probably your first culprit. You can use PowerShell to do this, group policy. Make sure you have this option set to 1 for it to work. Now, here's a very important point, and this is a little bit of controversy right now. For those not familiar with AbbVie, we have concept of user versus global publishing. That's how we use it in the documentation and in our vernacular. To go to an MSI world, to give you an idea of where that's coming from, you have concept in some MSIs of installing only for the user, the currently logged in user, or installing for the whole machine. That's the same parity, so that's what we're talking about here. We talked about Office 2013 as being the first product that has the native experience, 100%, indistinguishable from the other native deployments. And that's because of the deep OS integrations. When you install as a user in AbbVie, you publish to a user in AbbVie, you're not going to get those integrations. So that's why our recommendation, our only supported method, is to deploy Office globally. And that'll be important as we come to, I'll get to some of the gotchas in that, especially in RDS, and how you work around those. But it's important that you establish this early. Don't deploy Office, don't publish Office as a user. And so I put the command here, and I'll do this in the demo and show you how you actually deploy globally versus as a user. If you're using the AbbVie server, then it's kind of a different paradigm. You want to deploy to groups of machines, not to groups of users. All right, so we'll get into more discussion on why this is important and what you need to know about. The last one here is only a single Office package can be deployed, and that comes along with this too. Some users have kind of sliced up the Office suite and said, I'm going to have PowerPoint, Word, Excel in their own packages. We don't recommend that. And the reason why is those packages, first of all, that's usually a user deployment, which global is what we need. Second of all, those packages share their DLLs. When you have them split up like that, you have a lot more issues if, say, you deploy Word, an update for Word, and leave an update off of PowerPoint. And so we don't test that way. Some customers have had success doing it. It's just not recommended. If you can work it out to where you only have a single package installed, that's the way you need to do it. We've actually enabled, when the product first came out with AbbVie in Office 2013, there wasn't a way to even install more than one package because we predetermined the GUID. So packages in AbbVie, for those not familiar, they get package IDs or GUIDs. We predetermined that for Office, meaning every single Office package always got the same GUID, which prevented you from doing more than one package. And what that prevented was server customers, AbbVie server customers, that limitation was also on what you published and advertised in the AbbVie server. So if they had like a Ukrainian configuration and an English configuration or a marketing and a finance package and they deployed those to different sets of users or machines, they couldn't do it. So we've lifted that limitation. You can now go in and customize and add custom GUIDs, but it's not so that you can deploy more than one package. It's so that you can have more than one package on the AbbVie server publicized. So this is another important limitation. We'll get to that in a moment. This one is a real simple slide. I just wanted to point out you got a lot of deployment options. You do in Office 365 click to run as well. I think the one distinct one is the server. So the server allows you to actually publish and stream applications. It's a simple interface, allows you to do connection groups. There's some advantages to that, and that's probably the main distinction that you have for getting Office to your users. But you have all these deployment options with AbbVie, and I think this is a sell on AbbVie beyond Office. This is probably the promise of AbbVie is how much flexibility that you have to run it. Here's the link I said I'd promise you. This white paper came out in our last hotfix release, hotfix 4. This gives you more information on shared content store, as well as the UEV option that I talked about. If you're thinking about RDS, composable VDI, go to that link, aka.ms.abbvieperf. That'll go right to that paper. Download it and take a look at it. I'll give you more information. So let's talk about plugins. So plugins are very important for enterprise customers as far as AbbVie. There were concepts of how to do plugins in Office 4. They're a little bit different than 5. The one big difference is in Office 2007 and 2010, because you performed the sequencing. You had the option back then at sequencing time to actually record and install the plugins along with your Office sequencing. So the package, the single Office package you created in 2007 and 2010 could have all your plugins. There are other ways to not do that. If you wanted to be more dynamic with plugins, you could. But now that the package is essentially owned by Office, you're getting the AbbVie package directly from Office, which it probably should always have been. You don't have that option anymore to actually include the plugins with your main Office package. So how do you do it? Well, now what you use is you create packages or package of your plugins, And you use the Abbey sequencer just like you do traditionally, the 5-0 sequencer, very similar to the 4-6 experience if you haven't tried it. And you go ahead and install natively. Most plugins will need Office to be installed on the machine, so in your sequencing environment, have Office installed already before you start. And then you just run through the process, package up the sequencer, and then once that's deployed, we have the concept of a connection group. So each Office in AppV, in the current product anyway, lives in its own environment. There are some integrations back to the OS, but in between apps, unless you use a connection group, they don't talk to each other. So for every package you deploy that needs to connect to communicate with Office, there needs to be a corresponding connection group. And that's what you'd use for this. One other thing to point out, I missed on number 2 there. When you make a connection group, you've got to make sure that the metadata matches from the parent package Office and from the plugin. So this is a common gotcha on number 2. Because Office has virtual objects turned off, and has integration mode turned on, if you mix that, if you have either of those wrong in your plugin, then it will fail when it tries to create the connection group. So just be aware when you do your plugins that you've got to make sure that those options are set accordingly. And then when you actually create the connection group, if you're using the management server, there's a GUI that allows you to do it. If you're doing it from PowerShell or from an ESD or scripting it, you'll need to create it by hand. It's a pretty simple file. We are working on making that maybe a PowerShell script to make that a little bit easier. It's pretty simple. The docs actually will walk you through it and give you a good way to do it. So here's some more detailed documentation. The same link I gave you before, Abbey Office, will go into a little more detail on how to create connection groups and plugins for Office. So one thing to be aware of, just a little bit different than how you might have done it in 2010. Okay, this is a very important scenario. It's one of the biggest value props, I think, of Appy in Office, why you might consider this over some of the other deployments, although the coexistence supported across all the deployments, and I'll get into that. First thing I should say, though, is you probably should avoid coexistence. The Office team does support it, but they don't want you to be on it for very long, and that's because it's extremely hard to test every scenario in coexistence. Most things work just fine, but if it's a permanent solution, you're likely going to run into issues. So the best practice that we're going to tell you is, just like with XP to 7, mitigate your compat issues, get on a single version as soon as you can. Don't write that out of your budget for the year. Do it for a short amount of time only, because it's really hard for us to test and verify that everything works. For the most part, though, it works pretty well. The next recommendation I'll give you is that if you're starting native, it's probably better to coexist with native. Like you can use any other deployment. I think in general, it's probably the best practice. If you started with AppV, you're coming from 7 or 2010 up to 2013, try to go to AppV as well. But it's not a hard requirement, it's just our recommendation. And then make sure you're testing everything before you actually deploy it. Your specific scenario may have not been tested by us, there may be issues. Again, going back to things that I'll bring home in a lot of slides, remember only one version of AppV Office should be deployed with OS integration. So 2007, coexisting with 2013, remember there's no OS integrations in 2007. So if you're doing 2013, there's nothing you need to worry about. 2013 owns all the integrations. In 2010, we introduced some integrations that will conflict with the integrations in Office 2013. The nice thing is you have the ability to turn off integrations in 2010. You don't have that ability in 2013. So the recommendation is, if you're coming from AppV 2010, moving to AppV 2013, make sure you've deployed a package with integrations turned off. Not all customers have done this. It'll probably work, but our tested scenario is what I just described. Outlook. Outlook's problematic because it has a profile, because it upgrades that profile. It doesn't make a new one. If users are switching back and forth between Outlook, that's a problem. So make sure you're disabling or not installing make sure there's only one version of Outlook that the user gets to or launches, because that just will not work. And then the last one, only one version of Office can own the file type. And this is done by last writer wins. So if you're MSI to AppV, the last time the MSI was installed or repaired, if that was the last thing, the operation that happened, those applications will own the file types. In AppV, for those familiar with the vernacular, the last time you published, so you can actually republish if you want AppV to own, that will own the file types. And the nice thing in AppV is you can actually turn off publishing for certain Office apps. So if you actually have PowerPoint in both packages, but you want an already deployed MSI version of Office 2007 or 10 to own the file type association. Just don't publish PowerPoint in 2013. And that way, everything else will get the 2013 file extension ownership, with the exception of PowerPoint. Actually, I'm going to demo this and show you how you can actually do this dynamically in your environment, because that's an important part. Again, just I'm going to drive it back home. Coexistence should be temporary. You should have a plan to mitigate just as soon as you can. Enough luxury. Okay, so here's our matrix. I had this broken out quite a bit more granularly at Tech at Houston if you downloaded those. We've changed our guidance. In fact, that office link that I gave you, aka.ms at the office, there's actually a coexistence section that follows it. And so in discussions with the office team and some of our own testing, even though we've recommended try to stay with your deployment options through, you shouldn't have any trouble going through, with the one caveat that I already talked about, is if you have 2010 AppB installed, you're going to 2013, deploy it with isolation for the best compatibility. Okay. So let's jump back over to demos. Let's see how our packaging machine is gone. All right. So let me clear the decks here. You can see it completed, successfully. You'd see an error otherwise, and you could go check that file that I still have up here in the temp directory. Remember, it would generate a new one, sort it by date. I can get why it failed. In this case, it worked. So if I come back out now to, remember, I was able to set where that package was going to be stored. I just set in my working directory, so it's right in my ODT folder here. I'm sorry, let me zoom in. So right in my ODT folder, I have a new folder now, which is AppB packages. And if you're familiar with AppB at all, you'll see that the output here is exactly what you'd expect from your own packages. So that there tells you it's using the same flattening process that you'd use in the standard sequence that you download to sequence your own applications. Now, if you look at that, there's the AppB package, which is the actual package, and then you have two pieces of metadata. I won't go into detail on these except for the deployment config we'll talk about. Why is there a user config, though, you might ask? If I'm telling you it has to be deployed globally, which is where the deployment config corresponds, the answer is it was just easier to leave it as is. So the user config shouldn't be used, because you're not going to deploy as a user. If you need to make customizations, use the deployment config that's there. So if I look at the size, then you'll notice it's almost identical to the stream that we talked about. So it was about 800 megs for, let's get the tooltip here. It was 800 megs for, it's not coming up, for the actual volume SKU, the Pro Plus SKU, and then it was 200 megs for the English culture. You can see it's pretty much the same. So it's about a gig in size in the final package. Okay. So let's actually talk about deployment. So I'm going to do the most basic deployment that you can, which is just standalone right on the system. It's just a lot easier for demonstration purposes. Like I said, that screen I showed you, there's lots of deployment options. You use AppB server. There's a CM integration that works really well. You can use the same packaging model as you use for MSIs. I'm just going to keep it simple today and just show you a standalone from PowerShell to give you a good idea of the options, the power that you have to actually script things. Okay, so I'm going to start by elevating a Windows PowerShell. Oops. Command prompt. All right. And let's zoom in here. All right. So the first thing I'm going to do is import the module. And you can add this to your path so it's always there if you're using it a lot on the system. And it's called AppB Client. Okay. Now I'm going to go ahead and show you what I got installed on the system. So I'm going to use the git. And the nice thing is you can use tab complete once you have the AppB Client installed. So I'm going to do git AppB packages. You can see all the commands we've got. Oops, let's write it out here. AppB client packages. And if I use the all command, it'll actually show me ones that are not only published but actually just installed. So you can see here I have Notepad++, and then I also have Office 2010. So what we're going to show you here is a coexistence scenario. In this scenario, I've got AppB. It's isolated, not integrated. 2010 here, so we'll show you that mode. All right. So So the next thing I want to make sure, and I've already said it on here, but just to show you, I can do it from PowerShell, you can do it from Group Policy as well, is remember I need scripts to be enabled. And the client is not enabled by default. So you set the group policy or you run the following command. Set app be client configuration. Oops. And then the command is enable package scripts and make that equal to 1. And I'm missing the output there. And then you can see we've got it set. All right. So then let's actually go down into my directory. I'm going to go down to ODT, my working directory. And I'm going to go to Abby Packages. Let me scroll this down so you can see the end here. Abby Packages. Here's the same files I showed you in Explorer. So then the command, I'm going to use the add Abby client package. I'm going to do the name of the package. And then I'm going to use the pipe command. For those familiar with Linux and Unix, pipe command will continue the same arguments into the next command. Because it's actually a two-step process. You actually use the add command to add that package to the system. That goes down into the root directory, creates the virtual root, sets up the shell, gets the package ready, and then the publish command actually goes through and finishes the install for either the user or the machine, sets up the file type associations, any post-install scripts, etc. So it's a two-step process. You can save time if you're doing it from the command line just by using the pipe command. And so I'll use my publish command. And I don't need to specify the argument because it's already there. But what am I going to add to it? We don't do it by user. If I were just to leave it blank, it would be a user install. Office needs to be installed globally, so I'll use the global switch. Okay, away it goes. And this is a VM, but it'll still be pretty quick here. I'll zoom back out. So the first manifestation is will be in the start menu. So you can see here, here's all my 2010 suited apps. So now it's going through the add process. It's not having to stream it. It's locally, but there's still streaming processes. That's essentially a zip file. And there comes my shortcuts. So it's unzipping the file, creating that package root at the root level. Now it's going through the publishing process because I saw the shortcuts. You see over here that I had my Office 2010 file types. The last thing that will happen is because we talk about last writer in, on the publishing process of app B, as soon as that finishes, these file types will be taken over. And I'm installing both Word and PowerPoint, so they'll both be taken over in this demo. And there you go. Just to show the coexistence, we'll go ahead and launch Word. Oh, and this is all set to go here. In the background, I'll get Excel 2010. You'll see they're both in the start menu. You can control shortcuts very well in AppV, so you can hide shortcuts from users, not even publish them. There's lots of ways. Again, why it's probably better in coexistence to do both AppV, because you'll have that granular control of both the suites if you're mixing those applications. Oops, I did the wrong one. Close that. Sorry about that. And we'll get my experience. That, by the way, can all be turned off in the customizations. The first run costs customizations if you don't want it. I'll run Excel 2010. And you can see, for the most part, and the testing that we do, which is pretty comprehensive, it's just hard to test everything. Coexistence actually works pretty well. Okay, let's jump back over to the slides. So we'll come back and show you a more advanced demo on how to use a deployment config once you've already deployed a package to make your environment more customized. But let's talk a moment about updates. So in 2010 and 7, again, to illustrate how much better the experience is for 2013. When you had to deploy an update, it was back to the sequencer. Now, you could save off a snapshot. You know, there's a lot of ways you could kind of, get around it. But you were creating a new package. Even if it was a small security update, new package. And so that was a big sticking point for a lot of you. And if you're in 2010 right now, you're still dealing with that. So I think this is one of the real advantages. If you're an AppV customer, if you're on Office with AppV, this is one of the big advantages. So how does it work? Well, it's the same thing I just showed you. So you're going to have to download the entire package again, the whole stream. But you don't have to worry about sequencing or starting from the package previous. You're just going to make a brand new package. And the package ID, unless you're actually setting the custom configuration I talked about, package ID remains static. You don't have to worry about that either. You're going to use your deployment method. Remember, you're going to install globally. Make sure you're using the global switch. Deploy that package, and then only the delta bits will be streamed, transferred. So you're not going to be streaming that 1-2 gig file every single time. It's just at the block level, the files that changed. And then, of course, user state, just like updates in standard or previous versions of Office or in standard MSI, the user profile's not changed. There's no settings. Let me make a point about this one. Because of the OS integrations, again, because DLLs are and file pages are held open by a lot of different things in Office, the best practice that we have is you restart the endpoints to make sure the updates take. Now, we have a good system as of Service Pack 1 where you queue updates. So if I deploy an update, that user's logged in, and they're using the previous version of Office, we'll actually hold that publishing process until all those handles free up. Again, probably the best practice is to reboot. As soon as those are available, then they'll get the new system. So that keeps the user session completely stable. So if you're not rebooting Dell Patch Tuesday and you deploy on a Wednesday, perfectly fine to leave the system as is, unless, of course, it's a security update and you need that user to get it, in which case you're going to want to reboot those endpoints as soon as you deploy that API package. So it's a good system to make sure you don't have this destabilized environments for users that might happen to be logged in. So much easier process. Customers really, really like that. Again, you have your packaging machine ready to go with that task to download the packages, and then it's always ready to go, and you can deal with versions much easier than you did previously. Okay, so let's talk about package customizations, and this applies to more than just Office. This is one of the advantages of the new App V5 product. But if we look specifically at Apple, that deployment configuration that I had, the reason why that system was created is it allows you to make changes to the package you already sequenced. The previous product, a lot of those changes, you had to go back and resequence to get them into the product. This allows you to take a system where it already has a package added, add a new deployment config to change an option, republish, and have that ready to go. And so it's a big advantage, especially for Office, especially coexistence, if you're making changes to file type associations or are showing and hiding different versions of apps while you're doing it. So like it says here, you can use it to disable certain Office apps. You can use it to change shortcuts, delete shortcuts, put shortcuts in different places. You can turn off file extensions if you don't want the mail to the pop-up Outlook. I mean, there's lots of options in all of the OS extensions. And then you can add your own scripts. If you're really advanced and you need to have like a driver installed after a package is installed, is updated, there's a lot of things you can do with the scripting. And again, I talked about how you don't have to repackage to get these changes, and that's probably one of the big advantages for the system. This is a big one here. Now, I'm a little short on time. I wanted to give you 15 minutes. I'm going to go a little bit over. I'll try to leave 10 here as I move through this. Try not to keep talking faster either, because this is an important point. A lot of customers, especially in an RDS environment, this is where we have the sticking point. How do they deal with a situation where they need entitlements of Visium Project only to some of their users? They've only licensed it to a smaller portion of their users, but they're in a shared system. If they can't user target, if they can't split up Office into multiple packages, how do they deal with it? So let me remind you again why this is problematic for customers right now. It's because of our recommendation around those two things: globally publishing and only doing one Office package. So if you need one user on that shared system, on that RDS or Citrix environment, to have Visium Project, you're giving it to all of the users. So what's our recommendation? Right now, we're giving this feedback heavily to the Office team that this is a problem. So here's what we have today. And we'd love to get your feedback. As you encounter this issue, and if you feel these solutions are unacceptable, please continue to give us the feedback. This is an Office limitation. They'll need to invest in Office to allow for user publishing, user targeting, or come up with another system. So here's what we have today. The option I have bolded is now the best practice, but it requires that you're on Office 365. And that's why I spent so much time talking about the shared user activation. So this allows you you'll deploy Visium Project, the full Pro Plus build, to your RDS environment, to Citrix Receiver, whatever the case may be. But you control entitlements back in the Office console. So you'll know which users have Visium and which have Project. So the users will log in. They will log in with their org ID. They'll get entitled to the apps you gave them. If they try to launch a Visium Project, they won't be allowed to if they don't have those rights. So this is by far the best experience for your users, easiest for you to manage. This is the one we recommend, but you must be on Office 365. Use shared computer activation if you're using RDS and Office 365. If you're using volume license still, you have the next two options. Second one might be a non-starter for you. Define pools for Visio and project users and make sure they stay in those pools, and then you don't run into those issues. The third one is another option where you have to get into group policy a little bit. If you're not familiar with the AppLocker product, it's user-based policy, prevents users from executing applications, put Visio and project EXEs into the user policy for the users that shouldn't have it. It'll prevent them from launching the executable. And that's another way you can deal with it. So these are our current recommendations. Let me keep moving. Just a few updates to the tool. This is since Houston. So these weren't yet in the product at Houston in May. These are now in the product. We talked about shared computer activation. I won't talk about it more. App exclusion is another big one. So app exclusion, you saw Visio and project are already discrete. You have to define those in the XML file to get those downloaded and in the stream. For the rest of the products, we had people that said, oh, I don't want OneDrive. I don't want Link. And how do I get my stream size down to under a gig? And so we didn't have that functionality. Now we do. You put it in the configuration file before you download the stream. You actually tell it which apps to exclude. And they don't get downloaded to the stream. They're not even in the package. You don't even have to worry about not publishing them. And the last one I already talked about was the publish ID, the package ID, where we had one GUID for every package worldwide. That's still the default, but if you need to have multiple package IDs because you want to publish to the server more than one Office package, so you can deploy and target different configurations to different users, find the configuration option to change the GUID. You can set it to whatever you like. And that's how you can have multiple packages published on the server. But it's not so that you can publish multiple packages on the same machine. Okay, we're really running a little short on time here, so I'll move quickly on this one. I'm going to show you now how, using the deployment config, there's two ways you can modify. So let's say you're not using exclusion. You have one Pro Plus package, but you don't want to show MS access. This is one way you can do it. You just prevent it from being published, which means it never shows up. The icons never show up. File types never show up. The user isn't able to launch it for all intents and purposes. So if you look down on the deployment config.xml, and I'll try to show this to you if time remains, you'll find the application subsystem. That's the orange part. You'll find the binary that you want to turn off. This is MS access. All you do is flip that to false. If you just want to disable a shortcut, you want to remove it, maybe change the location, find the shortcuts subsystem. You can set that to false. That'll turn off all shortcuts. Or if you want to find one specifically, just look for the binary, look for the executable again, and then comment or delete out this whole section. You can also go back just above the green section. You can see that's the location of the shortcut where the link's being created. You can modify that location or add multiple locations if you want to deal with shortcuts. So another powerful feature for Office. So let's go to our last demo here, and then we'll be out of time. Thank you for bearing with me. Okay, let me reset this very quickly. So let's take the scenario where I have that same environment you just saw, but I want to deploy Office 2013, but I have a compatibility issue with PowerPoint, with the plugin I have in PowerPoint. So we're going to go to the same state you saw in the previous demo. I have Office 2010 installed. I want Word and Excel and everything else to be taken over by 2013. I want to keep the file type association, shortcuts and everything with PowerPoint. So we'll look at how you actually deal with that. So I already have a package ready to go. It's the same configuration we showed previously. So I'll go down in here and I'll actually show you a deployment config. Now, a quick point on the deployment config for Office. It's huge. So if you're trying to open this up with Notepad, I get a lot of complaints about this, you're going to have a bad time. If you ever get it to load, trying to search for files using default Notepad search, it's just a nightmare. I mean, look at it, 110,000 lines. So use a real text editor. This is Notepad++, open source, 3 megs to download, free. Get a real text editor. It'll make all the difference for you. So I'm going to find the application subsystem. There's only one in the whole file, so that makes it very easy. You can see I say applications there. And even on a VM, that'll come up pretty quick. The big file. That's a big text file. And here it is. So just like I showed you on the slide, you can see all my applications there. So I'm just going to come down here and find PowerPoint. And I'm going to enable it to false. And that's it. And it's the other nice thing that Notepad++ knows XML. It'll let you know if you've had mistakes. It's just a much better experience. Don't use Notepad. All right, so we'll save this guy off. No PowerPoint. Okay. So let's jump back now to PowerShell. And I already have scripts enabled. I won't show you that again. Got to get out of zoom it. Make sure you elevate. Zoom in on this guy. All right, import the module. Right. Now, one point to make, if I had already installed this package, I haven't yet, but if I had already installed and published this, added and published this package to my system, and I wanted to have a new deployment config that prevented PowerShell or PowerPoint from being deployed, then what I would use is actually called the set app v client package command. So it's this command here. And then I'd actually use the same thing I'd use when I'm publishing. I'd use dynamic deployment configuration. And then the path to my new configuration option. I'd republish, and that same package that was already deployed to that user, PowerPoint would be gone. So I wanted to make the point, this is one of the powers of this. But I'm going to start from scratch, so I'm just going to go to a new line here. I'm going to go back to my directory. And I'll go into here. That's my old version. And there's my Note PowerPoint deployment config. So I'll go through the same commands, just adding it. Oh, it's connection group, path to it. And dynamic deployment configuration is the option. I call the file Note PowerPoint. I'm going to use pipe command, publish. And what am I going to use? Global, good. Hey, I did my job. Away it goes. And just like that, and we'll get right to questions right after this little spiffy demo here. So it's the same system we had, all of Office 2010 installed. It's going through the add process, unzipping that file, creating that package root. Then it moves over to publishing. We'll see the start menu stuff shows up first. And if I just do a search here for PowerPoint, you only see one. Everything else, you're going to see both versions. And then we jump back to the desktop. We're going to watch the file types here. Remember, I only wanted PowerPoint I wanted to keep in 2010. So let's finish up the last items here. Come on. And there we have it. So 2013 for Word and everything else. And PowerPoint's still on 2010. My plugin is saved. All right. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and show a slide here that I was going to hopefully get to. This kind of is your takeaway. If you have to take something back to your boss to talk about this, to convince them, it's kind of your summary. Objectives I had, take a picture of this, download the PowerPoint if you need to. This kind of arms you with how are they different? Why is 2013 important for enterprise? And what are the advantages of using AppV? So I really appreciate your time today. There are 7 minutes left, so let's start taking questions. Again, I will be at Meet the Experts tonight. I will be at the team where it says Windows Management. Find the Windows booth where the Windows client, where the device bar is. Behind that is Windows Management. I and my team, as well as my dev manager, will be there. Happy to answer any advanced questions. If you'd like, we're going to have a roaming mic. If you want to, we'd like to get you recorded, or you can come to the stand-up mic. But let's go ahead and start taking questions. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you. All right, one question back here. Go ahead.
So if you've got native Office 2010 installed and then you app v Office 2013, what's likely to happen?
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time? That's actually a little hard to hear with the echo.
You mentioned about if you've got native, stay native. If you've got app v, stay app v. Okay. So if you have got a native Office 2010 and you want to use app v for 2013,
okay,
what likely things are about to happen?
What will likely happen? Are you asking me if that's supported?
Or what sort of issues you like to encounter?
What are the issues? So like I said, I mean, I'll go back to that slide for a moment. Hopefully everyone had a chance to capture this one. If I go back to our coexistence slide, the only reason why I said I would recommend as a best practice to stay native or to stay with app V through both cycles is just the management of it. If you're using MSI, you're likely have it in your image. Sorry, let me go back here, get this slide up. You likely have it in your image. So yeah, you're referring to the fact that I talk about be native to native or be MSI. If you look at this slide, we've kind of come back from that and said, in talking with the Office team, there's no technical reason why they wouldn't work the same. And so I'm bringing that back and saying, it's really advantageous if you have 2010 app V to go to 2013 because of the management, it's the same. You also have the ability for real-time updates and configuration like you just saw in my last demo. So you're totally fine. If you're MSI 2010, want to go to app B, you're fine doing that. That's supported. In fact, the link that I show at the bottom here will actually link off. It's not in this slide. It's the app B office, aka .ms link. It'll actually link off to the coexistent pages for Office, where they talk about the statements. They will support this. We support it with the same caveats we had, which is we can't be comprehensive in our testing. You're totally fine going MSI to app B. Yeah. Any other questions? Step on up to the mic, or there's a roaming one if you'd like.
Well, we are not using the config manager to distribute our app B applications. We're using the app B server console for doing it. How do I specify the .global or /global or the dynamic configuration options in from a server point of view?
From app B server specifically?
Yes.
Okay, from app B server, the paradigms are a little bit different. You saw the PowerShell advanced stuff that I was doing from the command line. It's easier on the server. When you are targeting a group of computers, you're deploying globally. You're targeting users in the app B server, you're deploying to users. And the dynamic config is an add option. So you don't have to worry. The dynamic config always is associated with the package. Publishing is what's targeted machine versus user. So the dynamic config and the user config are going to be associated with the package. That's very simple to do in the server. You sideload it right there. So it's just a little different concept. You just know if you're targeting computers, it's global. Users, it's user. Good question. Anyone else? Right here. Let's get the mic so we can get you recorded. Help our community a bit.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm not quite familiar with these connection groups, so I wonder in an RDS environment,
right,
can I publish more than one connection group to make sure some users get plugin A and other users get plugin B?
Yes, you can. So again, I didn't show these commands, but connection groups have the same targeting mechanism as the packages. So you have the same concept of publishing. You can target users and machines the same way you can with packages. So if you had a situation where plugin A needed to be associated with Office and user A, plugin B needed to be associated with the same version of Office as user B, in that situation you'd have to have them both in the same connection group because Office is global, yeah. Now in Service Pack 3, if you went to Aaron's session, we are going to be introducing a better system for managing connection groups. It's an enhancement so that it's not so rigid. So we'll have a situation where you actually create optional plugins, meaning if the plugin doesn't exist, today if the plugin doesn't exist or the two packages don't exist on the machine, connection group fails. Well, we want to be a little bit more fault tolerant and also allow you to be dynamic so that if you have 100 plugins, but your users only get on average 2 or 3, go ahead and load up all 100, and when 2 are detected, it will still connect the connection group so it makes it easier for you so you don't have to have 100 different connection group definitions to manage it. So that's coming out in Service Pack 3. That'll be out before the end of the calendar year. So it should improve that tremendously. Gentleman back here.
Hello. Is the Service Pack 3 going to be launched for the App Vee server as well?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah,
that's a great point. So generally, if we make an enhancement to the client side, because most of the functionality is client side, so we've enhanced the connection group functionality, we'll backport it to the server. If you're on ConfigMan, you just get it. Because ConfigMan under the covers uses the PowerShell stuff. Server, I know people have been concerned with. It hasn't been updated for two service packs. We've got it for you. We've got some major bugs fixed as well. So look for that one. Go ahead, sir.
What is the best practice to hide the welcome screens?
So you'd want to use in the, actually the configuration options in the ODT. And you can go read about this on the ODT page. So this applies only to Office 2013. You can actually hide the screen. There's an option. So like I talked about in the first slide, it showed the different customization options. Click to run in Abby or similar, where you can do things like hide the EULA, hide that splash screen, that first run experience. You can also auto log in users so they don't get, if you're using subscription Office 365, so they don't have to know their credentials or put in their credentials. It'll just use single sign-on and do it automatically. So ODT is what you want. And in that customization XML file, that's where you'd make the change.
Thank you. Just if you're running a standard version of volume license, Office standard, your recommendation from a point of view of Visium project was to use AppLocker and use the full Pro Plus install. Does that not have a license implication, even though you're using AppLocker not to present it to it, but it's actually installed? And
yeah, so this is where I'm battling our licensing team a little bit. I'll be totally transparent here. We have to give customers an option. And so there are some licensing specialists that are saying, oh, well, if you have the binaries there, even if they launch them and it doesn't start, you're still liable for that app. Well, that can't be, because we have no other options for customers. So I've gone all the way up the chain in our worldwide licensing group and got them to agree that, no, that's not the case. And so what's happening is I'm waiting for this information to be filtered down the line so that they stop saying that. So provided that the user isn't able to access them, in the situation of RDS, where you're still on volume license, you're not yet to Office 365 and shared computer activation, should not be a licensing concern. If you find this, though, my name's on this slide, my information, my contact information. In fact, let me show that so that if you just want to jot it down. If you find that you're in an engagement with a licensing specialist and they tell you that's not possible, I need that person's name. Because it just cannot be the case. The Office team is not, as far as we know, is not going to enhance the product to allow user targeting of those apps. And so I want to make sure that that option stands. If you need to use AppLocker, that should be totally valid. Thanks for the great question. Thank you. We're out of time. Okay, so I can go out to the hallway. The next guy, you can come up. The next guy will be coming in, and we can migrate to the hallway or meet the experts tonight. Love to talk to you. You have my contact information. Feel free to reach out to me. Like I said, I own PM for all the project. Our dev manager, Jeff Pinkston's back here too. He's going to come up and help answer questions. Jeff, stand up, Jeff. So he's my dev counterpart for all of the MDOT products, including App Vee. So the two of us should be able to hopefully answer most of your things, or we'll call someone back home to do it for you. Thanks again. Appreciate it.